now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. I'm very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I have to say from the outset that this is very much a passion of mine. It was something not only I was trained in, but it's something that I had grown to love fairly early on in my life. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, please visit www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you'd like to be part of the show, please call 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And these broadcasts are now podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can even go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Well, how is your heart today? I hope it is well, and I hope you are well. I hope that if you are struggling today, you will find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. And it is certainly true that we are going through some difficult times. And one of the aspects of suffering through, let's say, the national tragedies with the pandemic and the shootings and anything else that we might hear in the news that is not limited to a particular town or a community or a state or a nation, it is that whatever is going on, it affects everyone, even down to the smallest towns and communities in our nation. And yet, with every change or loss that we experience in our lives, every disappointment, even every tragedy that we're faced with, sooner or later, they all present us with this challenge. Will this experience make me bitter or better? Will this experience make me bitter or better? And this is where I find most people struggling between these two extremes. And many people ask me, well, how? How do I keep from being bitter? And how do I keep on going to becoming better? And how does something have the potential to make me bitter or better? Well, I quite frankly, just smile and correct the person ever so gently and say, well, it's not a matter of this or that, because we flip the question around instead. And we realize that there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And it's been in you from the very, very beginning. And I'll be taking your calls in a little while because I would really like to hear from you on today's subject. It's walking a spiritual path. Well, let's start off with a simple question. How many of you have ever read the Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You Will Go? Okay, anybody? Okay. Oh, the Places You Will Go. It's one of our family's favorites. It's something that we read to our children when they were smaller. And it's kind of ironic with Dr. Seuss material, whether you're watching it on TV or reading the books. Dr. Seuss always had this underlying way of bringing home these very strong life lessons, but they had all been couched in children's stories. And certainly, Oh, the Places You Will Go is one book which can speak to anyone at any point in their life. I'm just going to read the first couple of short paragraphs. It starts off by saying, "Congratulations, today is your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head. You have feet on your shoes. You can steer yourself in any direction you choose. You're on your own, and you know what to do. And you are the person who will decide where to go. Oh, you'll look up and down the streets. You'll look them over with care. About some, you will say, I don't choose to go there. With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not-so-good street. And you may not find any that you'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town. It's opener there in the wide open air. Out there, things can happen and frequently do to people as brainy and footsy as you. And then things start to happen. But don't worry, don't stew. Just go right along. You'll start happening too. And oh, the places you will go." Well, I'm sure you either have read this before or heard it read, or you know somebody who has read it, and it's just, it's a wonderful book. Like I said, it really engages children and adults. If we're not careful, we will find something that can hopefully literally change our lives. Well, as I mentioned last week, walking a spiritual path is a very common phrase in today's world, yet it means different things for different people. Sometimes it might mean that one has undergone an awareness of something greater than themselves, and they have decided to engage in the spiritual disciplines in order to discover deeper and hidden truths of the mysteries of life. Or, still, there are others who believe walking a spiritual path is just simply code for sell all your possessions, move to a distant land, and you help the poor. And a lot of these times, I would hear someone make the remark that whenever somebody engages in this and they're undertaking a spiritual path, and they do something that just, you know, is incredible, there's always one or two people that make the comment, "Well, that must have taken a lot of faith." Well, yeah, it does, if one is called to do a certain thing. Well, okay, but what if that person makes a mistake or they realize someday that they've wasted their life? Well, the main issue is not whether this person believes he or she wasted their life by wanting to help others. Perhaps, really, the main issue is that the person actually found their life simply by reaching out to others in the first place. Perhaps this person found their life's calling simply by having the courage to step outside themselves, to transcend their so-called limitations. And like I said, this is something that I run into time and again, whether it's in the counseling office or outside of the counseling office, and especially whenever the subject of walking a spiritual path or undertaking a spiritual path comes up in conversation. I always notice that there's always a little hint of hesitation, a little twinge of doubt, or even a small amount of uncertainty. It's almost as if a sense of fear takes over and locks us away in the furthest recesses of our minds, a place where it's cold and dark, but it's a place that's also very familiar. And this is why we can talk ourselves out of things all the time. We make it sound so good. No, I don't want to do that because. And no, I can't do this because. And no, I won't do that because. But it's even deeper than any of this. It really comes down to the assumptions about what we think about ourselves or others or God or how the world is supposed to work according to what we think is best for us. I remember a time when I fought what I thought was a very difficult spiritual path. Oh, I had a deep desire to minister to others. I still do. I just thought that I was going about it all the wrong way and that God had made a mistake. See, I was about 24 years old at the time, and I had been pursuing my calling to go into the ministry full-time. And like all people who make it known that they will be doing some form of ministry in the future, well, you put that out there, and one gets asked to help out in church or to make hospital calls, or at least, can you fill in a Sunday school as a Sunday school teacher, you know, for somebody who called in sick? Well, anyway, yes, there was one of those times I was teaching an adult Sunday school group for several weeks. And I will be the first one in this audience to admit that I had a long, long way to go. I would be standing up there, papers flying all over the place, stammering over my words, losing my place from time to time. And it seemed like week after week, I would go home with an Excedrin headache, number 5. So one night, I had a conversation with God, and I said, "Look, I have been willing to pursue what I believe you put in my heart. And I'm even willing to step out in faith by teaching others, but come on, I really don't enjoy it. I really don't see the point, and furthermore, I just don't like it. So here's the deal. I will give this one more try, one more time, and let's see what happens." Well, the next time came around, actually it was rather quickly, my surprise, and there I was up in front teaching away, papers still flying all over the place, still stammering over my words, still losing my place from time to time, and finally, mercifully, when the time was up, I breathed a heavy sigh of relief. I quickly picked up my papers. I stuffed them back in my Bible and then in my pack, and I headed for my car. And now, no sooner had I unlocked my car and was about to get in, when a man comes running up to me and he says, "Hey, I'm glad I caught you before you drove off. I just wanted to say how much I enjoyed that lesson. No one has ever explained that passage to me the way you did. It all makes sense now. I've been trying to understand it for so long, so thank you. Just thank you." Well, we stood there for a moment and just kind of looked at each other. And then we shook hands, and I thanked him for his kind words. And I sat in my car for a long time, and I was gently massaging my right temple that was throbbing like it did each week. And I can't remember how long I was sitting there, but I had this awareness. I had like this light bulb moment where finally I looked up and I said to God, "You're not going to let me out of this, are you? I guess it's not about me." And when I said this, I could literally hear my heart speak to me, and it said, "Yeah, you're right. It's not about you. It's not even about what you can and can't do. It's all about what God can do in and through you. So will you at least trust me?" Well, ladies and gentlemen, the rest is history. Never the same after that moment. And I look back on that, and it's just incredible how certain people show up at just the right time and the right place in order to teach lessons to us who think we know better than God or the universe in trying to figure things out. But, you know, having fears and doubts and uncertainty to a certain extent is normal. Okay, it's certainly appropriate to have a fear over something that might cause us great danger or something that might harm us or even kill us. That's just wisdom, okay? But there's times when our fears and doubts and uncertainty get carried away. I mean, we try to reel it back in, you know, because, you know, after all, we want to make sure that we do things correctly, or we want to say things correctly when we walk on this spiritual path. At least we want to make sure we are going in the right direction. We don't want to get all turned around and shoot down this other little path, and who knows where that's going to lead us. However, what if we would entertain, just for the sake of today, this notion that being on a spiritual path, being on a spiritual journey, doesn't matter where we place our feet, because we can never fall off of our spiritual path. How often do we imagine that this spiritual path means trying to walk on this literal footpath or a little trail where we have to be careful where we step, or else we're going to fall off this path and we're going to, you know, turn an ankle, or we're going to go in a wrong direction. We've made a super big mistake. And what if walking a spiritual path is more about paying attention to the lessons that are in front of us along the way? That it's more about the process rather than the end result. And let's also entertain, just for the sake of today, that perhaps the entire purpose of walking a spiritual path is not for us to take a literal physical journey, but rather it involves us being open and allowing us to be taken on a journey inward within ourselves. And this is actually the purpose of any spiritual journey and the spiritual path that we are on. It always compels us to look inward. And this is how I can tell if, you know, myself or others are walking a healthy spiritual path. Am I looking inward? Am I striving to be better in my relationships? Is it bringing me closer to God? Is it compelling me to transform more and more things about myself so that I can transcend my so-called assumptions about my shortcomings or my excuses or why I think I can't do this? The purpose of any spiritual journey always compels us to look inward first. And this is actually the main point in one of my favorite books, The Alchemist. I don't know if you've ever read that, but if you haven't, put it on your list for Santa Claus, or if you just want to download it on Kindle, or what's the other one? There's so many apps out there. But yeah, you can download it. You can be reading it tonight. The Alchemist. And it's where a young shepherd boy named Santiago, he sets off to find his personal legend or his destiny. And his journey, ironically, takes him across various lands to the pyramids in Egypt, where he encounters various people along the way who are there at just the right time to help him along, you know, to go a little bit further and then a little bit further and a little bit further. And if you've ever read The Alchemist, you realize that Santiago's journey literally at some point brings him back to the place where he left. But he himself has been on this journey inward because he has been transformed along the way. It's one of the great lessons of any journey, the image and the value of irony, that we have kind of an idea built up in our minds of what this journey is going to look like and what's going to happen once we get to a destination. And we often overlook, like, wow, we just missed a lot of good things along the way because we were so focused on getting to the place where we said that we wanted to be, or the place where we said we wanted to go. And we just miss a lot. And the prominent theme that runs through the book, The Alchemist, is that through the character Santiago, we also realize that when you really want something to happen, when something is in your heart, the whole universe will conspire so that your desire and your wish comes true. And that I like. I think that makes a lot of sense. Because how many times do we feel like we're on our own, or nobody's going to understand, or you know, am I really doing this right? And we just need that other person to come alongside of us and say, keep going. You're at a very good place. And, you know, how is your heart today? And will always remind us to go inward, because that is where a true journey takes us. And it's this theme of when you really want something to happen, the whole universe will conspire so that your wish comes true. It's that theme that also ties into today's topic, because this is something I truly believe in, that whenever we pay attention to what has been placed in our hearts and we listen to the cry of our soul and we commit to it, the entire universe will make it happen. Our job is just to remain open and teachable to every situation in our lives, not to force it, not to say, no, God, you're not doing it right. You have to do this over here and not right now. I'm just not ready for that right now. Can you just wait a little bit? Can I fit you in for next Tuesday? If we remain open and teachable to every situation in our lives, this is when we discover that God gives us the desires of our hearts. We also discover that we may have been destined to embrace this cry of our soul all along. In fact, when we really get serious about listening to the cry of our soul, it takes the fear of failure out of the picture, doesn't it? See, we often get tangled up in the belief that just because we cannot see a path clearly marked out for us, you know, every step of the way, that all of our efforts will be for naught. I mean, we worry about making mistakes or walking this spiritual path perfectly because, let's be honest, there are times we want to avoid criticism or we want to shy away from ridicule and we want no part of being shamed. And to be quite honest, we've really been conditioned to expect these reactions to continue because these have been attached to us for so long. And we just imagine it's like, well, we're just going to get more of the same. And it's true that our spiritual path or our spiritual journey might be unknown to us, but it's not unknown to God. It's kind of interesting, you know, whenever we step out on faith and, you know, we realize that everywhere our foot touches, literally and figuratively, is where we're supposed to be, is a much larger spiritual path. And it's true, we don't see the beginning from the end or anything else in between at times, but it's funny about faith. We take that measure of faith and a little bit more of this spiritual path unfolds before us. And then we take a few more steps, or we journey inward, I should say, and a little bit more is unfolded for us. And we pursue that, and a little bit more, and we pursue that, and so on, and so on, and so on, until eventually we've been walking this path for quite some time. But let us not assume that all of our efforts will be for naught. And why is it that we always worry about not being able to do well? And we often assume that whatever we undertake will turn out wrong. What if it turns out right? What if it's already been destined that, hey, you can't make a mistake here, that the path is unfolding before you. You just need to walk. You just need to trust. But let's bring it back to us a little bit more for a while. Is it really a fear of failure, of not being able to fulfill this spiritual path, or is it a fear of success? Are we afraid that, ooh, this just might be happening? Then what? Now what do I do? What did I just sign up for? And so forth. And, I mean, again, let's just be honest with ourselves. It just might be a little bit of both. I mean, either way, what fear does to us is that it keeps us immobile, whereby we do nothing. We don't say yes. We don't say no. We don't say anything at all. Now, I deal with a lot of people so filled with fear that something will always go wrong, it will never work, or we are just so filled with anxiety over our assumptions. But if we were guaranteed success, we wouldn't be worried. You know, since we are in the throes, October and November is actually a good time to be a sports fan. And for folks on the East Coast, we enjoyed quite a game last night, the Eagles and the Giants. Now, I know people on the West Coast are going to say, who? Okay. But, you know, for us right outside the Philadelphia area, we have to hang our hopes on the Eagles. And it was quite a game. But it was just something I was reminded of watching this football game last night, as well as the baseball playoffs and other, you know, ball players in general. And, you know, it's fascinating. Because even sports figures struggle with anxiety and fear and assumptions all the time. And ball players are notoriously superstitious, that they have all kinds of pre- and post-game rituals designed to quiet those voices of anxiety and fear and worry in their heads. In fact, many of them often have to train their minds to see themselves being successful, to see themselves hit that home run, or to steal a base, or to catch a football, or to shoot the puck into the net. Or they have to see it. They have to believe that they can do it, and they act upon that. And so a lot of them would say, yeah, playing sports is very much, you know, keeping in shape and being active and so forth. But a lot of it is mental. And a lot of it is believing that how you've been trained, how you've been practicing, and what you know, you bring it all together, and that's the way the game is going to be played. And you don't worry about whether or not, you know, at the end of nine innings or at the end of four quarters, you don't worry about that. You play the game from start to finish, but you play it also in between, and you play it well to the best of your ability. Well, speaking of how we can easily talk ourselves out of something, it's very common. I use this all the time. It's just to show people just how quickly our assumptions come up. And we first start with cognitive distortions. And ironically, there are about 15 of them that everybody does. I don't care who you are. These are 15 common cognitive distortions. And, you know, these are simply ways that our minds convince us of something that isn't really true. You know, but these are inaccurate thoughts, and they're usually used, or they come in handy to reinforce that, you know, those negative thinking or emotions, and telling ourselves things that sound rational and accurate, but really only serve to keep us feeling bad about ourselves. I'm just going to read off a couple of them to you. Maybe you've done these throughout your lifetime. There's one that's called filtering. It's when a person filters out all the good things, but then just focuses on the negative. So let's say that you're in school or at work or somewhere, and you have a review coming up, or a job performance, or something like of that nature. And, you know, your supervisor or whoever is going down the list of everything, and like, everything is great. Everything is wonderful. You're doing a great job. You know, keep up the good work. However, and then they start talking about one specific thing. And instead of focusing on all the other good things that you are doing well, you filter that out in your mind, and you focus on the one aspect, which may not have been a big deal. May have just been like, okay, but this is one area in which you can work. But we filter that out because we just think, oh my gosh, I needed to be perfect, and I can't believe. Okay? And so that's a cognitive distortion. Okay? And another one, I'll just say one more here, is called catastrophizing. It's when a person expects a disaster or dread to strike, no matter what. This is also called magnification or magnifying. It can also come out of its opposite behavior or minimizing. A lot of people either minimize or catastrophize. And in this particular cognitive distortion, let's say a person hears about a problem or a situation and they keep asking, what if? What if this happens? What if it gets worse? Oh my gosh, what if it happens to me? I can't imagine this. And what about that? And what about this? And the person can just go on and on and on about it. But for all of these cognitive distortions and more, what actually I would say is the catalyst behind them or underneath them is the assumptions that we have. Like, for example, if we filter out like all the good things that were told about us or told to us, and we focus on that one thing that just is, okay, that's your growing edge. No big deal. You can work on it. Don't worry about it. But we are so worried about it. The assumption behind all that, the simply filter things out, is that we can't believe that we didn't get 100%. We can't believe that we didn't nail the report, or we can't believe that we couldn't nail the supervisor's comments and what and how we're being valued in a certain way or judged based on our work performance. Okay, like that's just too much for us to bear. Okay. So anyway, we have to deal with cognitive distortions and our assumptions all the time. And trust me, they pop up when we're on a spiritual journey, a spiritual path. But, you know, just let's go back to what we were entertaining a little while ago, that, you know, everywhere we go, and oh, the places you will go, especially inward. What if this spiritual journey, this spiritual path is meant for us to discover with its own lessons and interest along the way that it was already designed to take us deeper into ourselves and ultimately bring us to the place of our soul's greatest desire? See, by thinking this way, we realize that we never have to fear or worry about making a mistake, or that somehow we just might be displeasing to God. And, you know, again, let's take being honest one step further here, and we have to also stop worrying about whether or not others will understand what it is that we do. It's not their spiritual path. You know, they have their own, and they have to walk it, and they need to be responsible for themselves. So, but there are many, many lessons along the way. It is about the process. It is not about the end result. The end will take care of itself, okay? But there are lessons along the way if we are open, if we are teachable, if we are paying attention. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this subject. So, again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in about 1 minute. Well, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. At the top of the broadcast earlier, I read a little bit from Dr. Seuss's Oh, the Places You Will Go. And very interesting that it's definitely suited for children. But there are very subtle yet powerful life-changing lessons for us adults if we simply pay attention. So let me read another section of this wonderful book. It says, you'll be on your way up. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar with high heights. You won't lag behind because you'll have the speed. You'll pass the whole gang and you'll soon take the lead. Wherever you fly, you'll be best of the best. Wherever you go, you will top all the rest. And so on and so on and so on. As I said, if you have never read that book, I highly recommend it. Put it on your list for Santa Claus. Okay. Well, in like I said, in the first half of this the broadcast, we were talking about walking a spiritual path and just exactly what does this mean? What does it entail? What does it require of us? It's not a literal path, but it always involves a journey inward to discover new things about ourselves. So I see that we have a caller, and her name is Jenny from Pennsylvania. Jenny, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Houck. Yep, this is Jenny calling.
Hey. Okay. How are you today?
Good, good. This is my first time hearing your broadcast. So. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So my question actually is, I love this idea of walking a spiritual path and knowing that it is really first and foremost going inward. My question is, going inward without the ego taking over or really getting in the way. So
right.
I guess that's
right.
My question.
Okay. Well, I think you and I both know that the ego is always with us. That's okay. Just something that we have, and it can rear its head at any time, any place. And as much as we deny its existence, you know, it's going to be there when we least expect it. In fact, whenever we get really tired or run down or we get irritated or annoyed or something, okay, the ego is not far behind. So when we're walking this spiritual path, the ego actually has to become less and less in our lives. Easier said than done, because like I said, the ego is always there, but it's just recognizing, you know, am I doing this strictly for myself or am I doing this for others? And this kind of takes us back to, you know, the name of the broadcast, Reclaiming Authenticity, and reclaiming all that is already in us, discovering those things. And we realize that as we reclaim our gifts and graces and strengths and personality and resiliency and all that, we realize that those things are not necessarily for us. You know, our especially our gifts, our graces and our strengths and skills and that are always meant for somebody else. And other people's gifts and graces and strengths are also meant for us. I mean, we are so connected to one another, but whenever the ego comes in, it's always self-seeking. It's always self-serving. And again, I was talking about earlier in the the broadcast that you know, the ego can really get in the way, and we start making it all about us, and we don't realize that the more and more we go inward, as the spiritual path takes us, the more and more we confront the ego, the more and more we have to take a long, hard look at it and not be afraid of it, but see it for what it is and where it's coming from, because usually it comes from a place in us that's still wounded, a place where we're still hurting. And, you know, because the ego wants to defend. The ego wants to say, yeah, hey, but what about me? you know, the ego is always there with, like, you know, hey, pay attention to me, look at me, look at me. And that comes from a place that, you know, needs our further development, I'll put it that way, spiritually. But again, that's the role of walking a spiritual path. That's what we continue on. We continually go inward more and more. And as I said, the ego itself has to become less and less.
Great. Okay. Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure. You're welcome. Did you have another question?
No, I just, I mean, that's a big question, and I guess it's not a one-time fix it, so I guess, yeah.
Right. Wouldn't it be great if it was?
But then we would not be.
Okay, I'm done with you.
Right, but I guess it's that process that is where we are shaped, is that right?
Right. And we can never think that, yes, we have fully arrived, because there's always a little something more we can learn about ourselves. But again, that you know, walking that spiritual path, going inward more and more, and, you know, it just takes us into, you know, deeper and deeper aspects of ourself, and the things that we think that we've dealt with, but we haven't fully. So, yeah, but it's all part of that process, that journey.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, sure. You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, thank you for that phone call. Speaking about the ego, interesting. We'll use this as a nice segue. I also wanted to talk about the practical aspects of walking a spiritual path. I mean, what does this look like on a day in and day out? And are there things out there that can actually help us kind of help us maintain our focus in what we do, to kind of give us a little, you know, food for the journey, as it were, spiritual food to sustain us and to feed ourselves. Has anybody out there ever walked a labyrinth before? A labyrinth. It's a sacred design that is an archetype, and it dates back probably 4,000 years or so, but definitely medieval times. And it's today it's used symbolically. It's kind of a walking meditation out there, or some people have, you know, use it as a choreographed dance or a site of rituals and ceremony, and as well as other things. And interestingly, labyrinths are kind of these spiritual tools for, you know, personal, psychological, and spiritual transformation, and also thought to enhance both left and right brain activity. And it's very interesting. You can just Google a labyrinth and it comes up very elaborate and so forth. And some people have been very good at just making their own labyrinth for their own personal meditation. There's even some handheld labyrinths that are made out of wood, and with the etchings or the carvings within that follow kind of a, you know, this walking meditation, that you would just run the path with your finger. You know, you would go into the center and then back out. And it's interesting. I was always told that, you know, people walk a labyrinth pretty much the same way and how they approach life. And I go, really? I couldn't get that at first. I just didn't quite understand it. And until I walked a labyrinth for the very first time, and then I got it, because here's what I did. Unbeknownst to me, I just I paused at the entrance, and I walked it just a normal kind of walking gait. Wasn't rushing or anything, wasn't running, you know, through it, but just walking. Wasn't really paying attention. I didn't realize that it was a walking meditation per se, But I just realized that I was just kind of, you know, taking my time and kind of just looking around, gawking and stuff like that. And I get to the center and I said, wow, that was pretty cool. I liked the twists and turns and so forth. But then I turned around and I came back out. And or as I was coming back out, other people were also walking the labyrinth at the same time I was. And I thought it was, you know, a kind of a design that had this one way in and another way out. But I didn't realize that it was also, you know, the way you go in is the way you come out. And so eventually with the twists and turns, we, you know, kind of ran into each other. We were just kind of facing each other. Here we are both on this path and we're looking at each other and we're like, well, who's going to move? Who's going to step aside? Because we don't want to step off this little path. You know, we want to do this right. And so finally we just kind of just laughed and we just said, oh, here, you step to the right, I'll step to the left. And we just took a step past each other and then we got back on the path and we kept going. And again, it was afterwards that I really thought about this whole concept of the labyrinth and the lessons that it has for us, that it's really about the mindfulness. And it is true. It's how we approach a labyrinth and how we walk a labyrinth, literally, is kind of how we approach life. You know, do we, you know, consider, you know, if somebody's in our way, who's going to yield first, or let's put it in more spiritual terms, who's going to apologize first, okay, instead of holding a grudge? Or we're walking the labyrinth and, you know, the person, somebody's ahead of us or somebody's behind us. Do we step out of the way or do we just walk slowly behind this person and we wait? We just follow the person as they go into the center and out again. Or do we just want to quickly do a sidestep and keep going because, well, in our minds, we walk faster than this other person. So we kind of have this right to be able to do that. And it's, again, interestingly, how this labyrinth meditation will actually hold a mirror up to ourselves and say, well, isn't this how you approach life? Isn't this the way you are in your relationships with people? And since that time, every time I walk a labyrinth, I am more mindful of what I am doing. Yes, I take my time. Every step, sometimes I say a prayer or just a quiet meditation or maybe a mantra, but it's very intentional for me. It's also very intense, but it's also very intentional. And if there are other people in the labyrinth, I may wait and, you know, till they're finished, or I might, you know, join in and start my path as they are completing theirs. And, you know, I will be the one to yield whenever we are, you know, close to each other, either coming from opposite directions or so forth. And I'll just very calmly just step off that path until the person goes, and then I'll step back on and continue my meditation. And so the labyrinth really taught me a lot about myself and just not only how I approach life, but also the relationships and so forth. And truly, it's not about how quickly you can get in and get out, but it's also mainly, you know, what is transformed along this path or in this labyrinth, because that certainly brings us to another aspect of walking a spiritual path. And it has, I'll put it to you this way. It's one thing to start on a spiritual path, to be committed to a spiritual path, a spiritual journey. It's also something else that as you've been walking this spiritual path for some time, to be mindful that it has a lot to also do with surrender, a full surrender. It's not a, well, I'm going to call time out here, or I don't like that, so I'm not going to go any further. But in order to keep us moving inward, and like our caller had mentioned with the ego, what really keeps the ego at bay is this full surrender. It's just, you know, it's part of it, but it's also a much deeper part of it. It's much taking us into a mature level spiritually. One of the things that I'm always reminded of, and this is something that I'll have to share with you during another broadcast, but one of the prayers that I have really fell in love with? Yeah, I think I'll say that right. One of the prayers that I have fallen in love with, how about that, is a prayer from John Wesley. And it was a prayer that's traditionally prayed at the beginning of a new year. And it's a covenant prayer. And it is a prayer of total surrender. And, you know, I will admit that in the past, it was just something rote that I said that I didn't really give much thought to because, well, okay, we'll say a prayer and then we'll go on to something else. But when I really sat with this prayer, in fact, when I took this prayer into a labyrinth, you talk about a transformation. Unbelievable. I could not predict, you know, just what would have happened because I don't even know in what point the labyrinth I was walking, but there was in me a total surrender, a total, yeah, I don't care what happens. It doesn't matter. What does matter to me is that I have this incredible relationship with God, and God has certainly given me the desires of my heart. God has placed them there. God has placed desires in our hearts all the time. When we fully surrender, that's when we find the beauty of, yeah, God has given us tremendous gifts. God has truly blessed us. God has given us the cry of our very souls. And so I just want to share with you this covenant prayer in the Wesleyan tradition. It's a contemporary version, so you can, again, Google this and print it off and sit with it because it is indeed life-changing. And this is how it begins. I am no longer my own, but yours. Put me to what you will. Place me with whom you will. Put me to doing, put me to suffering. Let me be put to work for you or set aside for you. Let me be praised for you or criticized for you. Let me be full. Let me be empty. Let me have all things. Let me have nothing. I freely and fully surrender all things to your glory and service. And now, O wonderful and holy God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer, you are mine, and I am yours. So be it. And the covenant which I have made on earth, let it also be made in heaven this day. Amen. That is a powerful prayer. It's one thing to walk a spiritual path. It's another thing to recognize that it will always pull us inward, to look at where we have been, who we are, who we think we are, and so forth, confronting the wounded parts of ourselves that are crying out to be healed, seeking to restore relationships, and so forth. But it also pulls us into a time when it's like, okay, it's time to fully surrender. It's time to say, I trust you completely. And when we're able to get there, when we fully embrace these things, there is no fear. There's no anxiety. There's no worry. It's a total surrender. In fact, it seems that a spiritual path is exactly what we have been doing all our lives. Every step, everywhere we have been, literally, figuratively, metaphorically, we've been walking this journey. certainly God gives us the desires of our hearts. And trust me, God understands any kind of excuse that we think we can come up with to say, yeah, but I don't know if this is going to work out. But just like I found out that one day that man came running out and, you know, telling me pretty much, look, it didn't matter if you were dropping papers or stammering over your words or whatever. I got the message. And in that moment, I realized it wasn't me. It was about me, but it wasn't about me. Because that man heard the voice of God. So I would invite you to consider your spiritual path. Not in, let's say, you know, the normal sense of, well, how long have I been at this and where has it taken me and so forth, but the commitment that it requires, as well as where has taken you inward. What have you learned about yourself? What have you come to understand? What have you come to fear? What have you come to be, you know, be anxious about and so forth? Let me be full. Let me be empty. Let me have all things. Let me have nothing. I freely and fully surrender all things to your glory and service. And now, O wonderful and holy God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer, you are mine and I am yours. You have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am Dr. James Houck. I hope that you have enjoyed this time together. I invite you to tune in next Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. And again, like, if you would like more information or to leave me comments about today's show, please visit the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Until next week, please be safe, take care, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to reclaimingauthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.